after Easter, though it used to be the third Sunday after Easter, if I'm not confused. But so we have Mizmor LeDawi, the famous 23rd Psalm, a good example, again, of a text that's so well known that you really ought to look at it in the original and sort of see what it really says. Not that it's significantly different, but even translating these things often degenerates into just remembering what you've remembered, and we need to look at the words. Okay, Mizmor, a song. There's our Zamar word again. We've seen this again and again. A song to David, who himself was a shepherd boy, not to be forgotten here, that this whole shepherd imagery certainly has David in the background. Do you know that in the ancient Near East, the word shepherd was really one of the standard titles for king? So the shepherd imagery is sort of a two-pronged. One, obviously a shepherd, okay? But even more than that, it's the authority figure of the king. And the king was known as the shepherd of his people. I think you have some real connections here to the kingdom of God and Christ as king, even though we use shepherd terminology, but don't lose that in the mix somewhere. So there's a royal motif as well. Yahweh Roi. Yahweh is my Roi. Now, you may not have learned the word Ra'ah. This is the third hey verb, Ra'ah. There are three Ra'ahs in Hebrew, only to make life miserable. There's Resh Ayin Hey, which is this verb, and it means to act as shepherd, or to shepherd, were that a verb. You know the Ra'ah, which is Resh Aleph Hey, that means to see visually. There's also a geminate verb, Resh Ayin Ayin, that means to be bad. You know the noun Ra more than the verb Ra'ah, to act in a bad way. But this is Ra'ah with a third hey. The third hey is gone when you have pronominal suffix. It's the participial form. You see the holem? My shepherding guy. That's what this really means. My one who shepherds. Yahweh is my shepherd. Lo echsar. I will not chasar. Chasar means to want in the sense of lack something. It doesn't mean to have sort of lots of desires like a Christmas list, or all the ridiculous things your kids put on their birthday list, but it means to need something, want in the sense of really more essential things than desires. I will not lack anything, which isn't a bad reminder of focusing on the essentials. Bin Naoth Desha Yar Betzeni. In Naoth is just the plural of Nawa, to which is the word for pasture. All right, in pastures of Desha is the collective noun for green stuff. All right, greenery. So in pastures of green stuff, he will, or just this omnitemporal, he ravatzes me. Note that ravatz here is clearly hifil, imperfect, with the object suffix ani. He ravatzes me, or causes, better, he causes me to ravatz. Ravatz means to graze. Sometimes it means to kind of sit out in a field and chew your cud, or take it easy. It's kind of a peaceful word. This is what animals do for about 90% of their day. All right, they just sort of sit out there or graze. He causes me to graze. It can mean even to lie. Don't we have, he caused me to lie down in green pastures. It doesn't necessarily mean to lie down, but oftentimes that's what animals are doing. I suppose there's a technical difference between grazing, which they generally do on all fours, and lying down, which they don't. But I think the word sort of is all of the above. So in pastures of green stuff, he causes me to do what animals do in pastures of green stuff. Alme minuchoth. Yenachleni. Now, here's a loaded word. Me minuchoth. Me is the construct form of mayim. Mayim, which has that odd dual ending, waters. But the construct looks like a regular plural, me. So me, funny-looking word, just means waters of. Minuchoth is the plural of minucha, and it means rest. Now, we just had the verb nuach a couple weeks ago in beginning Hebrew. The verb nuach means to rest. Minucha is really the noun for rest or place of rest. Now, I can't help but see a little a theological loading up in this word, all right, and plugging into that whole theology of rest here. You sort of scratch your head and always need to be a little wary of over-interpretation. To one degree, waters of rest simply mean calm waters, all right? And that's, of course, an appropriate place for animals to get a drink. They really can't go stick their head in a rushing stream. They need a quiet place. But waters of rest, you know, brings with it this expression, rest, of the theological understandings of rest. As in Psalm 95, they shall never enter my rest. That rest is always in the semantic, theological semantic field of salvation. You see? And you just wonder if that isn't at least in the background here. Waters of rest would mean the place where God grants peace and salvation. This isn't just about animals, after all. In waters of rest, he nahals me, a nice PL imperfect. The dagish is missing in the middle root letter, of course, because it's a guttural. How do you know it's a PL? Because there's a shawa under the imperfect prefix. Nahal means just to lead. To lead, and again, note the object suffix. He leads me. Nafshi yeshovev, my nefesh, he shuves in the Hebrew one, guys. What is this? It's not a geminate. Aha! Tricked you, Lane. All right? It looks like a geminate, in which case the root would be shavav, but that's why they're in the same lesson. This is the poleal. Remember, that's the other. Good, Belts. Poleal. It's good to know these Greek guys actually know some Hebrew, too. This is a poleal of the hollow root. Remember, we talked about that poleal being the substitute conjugation for the pi'el, or the D system, in verbs that don't have a middle root letter. So this is from shuv. Shuv. And it's sort of a transitive sense of shuv, not to return, but to bring back. My nefesh, he restores. Restore is really a good translation here, I think, of this D use of shuv. He brings back, not necessarily from death to life, but from what? Inactivity to activity, from feeling tired to feeling strong. Revive wouldn't be bad. We use revive in the same way, even though that doesn't necessarily mean bring back to life, but revive can sort of imply that. Okay, my nefesh. Note that it's nefesh. Again, my soul isn't really what nefesh means. Nefesh means your person, your vitality, yourself, your whole being, not soul as opposed to body. Not unrelated to the confession, I believe in the resurrection of the body, this sort of wholeness concept. It's not just souls. So he restores my being. Yinacheni, again, another funny verb, third hay, nacha, it's hif-eel. The third hay is gone. You know it's hif-eel because pathak under the first root letter. Under the imperfect prefix. Naka, another word for lead. He leads me. Again, object suffix. He leads me. B magle tzedek. A magl or a maglim are really ruts or tracks in the paths. All right, but it's a deep path. This is what you know, where the animals walk. Kind of creates a path. Rut isn't, I always like the expression ruts of righteousness or righteous ruts. It's not bad, actually. Kind of stay on the path. He leads me in ruts of righteousness. And again, you see why I think it's legitimate to theologize a little bit on waters of rest. because suddenly we're talking about paths of righteousness. Now, animals aren't particularly concerned about whether the path they walk down to the pond is a righteous path or not. See? That it's a correct path, that it accomplishes the goal, that it gets there expeditiously, all has to do with, in a sense, rightness, but righteousness is a little bit more theologically loaded. He leads me in paths of righteousness for the sake of Shemo, his name. Notice it's not really for the sake of us, it's for the sake of him himself, who he is. That's all in part of his name. Gam, even also, key here probably means if or when, should I, also when, actually that's not bad, also when, that's a slightly different nuance than if, or how does that go in English, even though, is that what we have, I'm trying to remember now, even though, it sort of assumes that this may well happen, you see, okay, kind of like that one theme out of the homily this morning. All right, we're still Christians, but there's still doubts. That kind of comes with old man, new man tensions. Yeah, you may be in danger. This doesn't preserve you. We're not perfectly sanctified, but there will be times when you walk in. Now, where are you walking? Even when, or also when, a lake. I halak, this is halak, I walk in gay. Gay is a steep valley. There are any number of words for these sort of geophysical characteristics, but this is a fairly steep valley, what we might call a ravine, as opposed to a broad valley. In a valley of Tsalmawith. Now, there's a great literature on this word. Let me try to cut to the bottom line relatively quickly. There is a Hebrew word, tselem, that means, or tsail, that means shadow, and there is a Hebrew word maweth that means death, and if you put them together, you get tsal maweth, and it sounds like shadow of death. However, Hebrew does not make compound words like that. German does. All right, this is vintage German, and I suspect that at this point, the lexicographers were influenced perhaps more by German than by English. What they know now is that maweth is a is an intensifying suffix for nouns, so that it intensifies the noun. We have we don't have this in English, do we? I can't think of one. I mean, there are suffixes on nouns that create a slight change to it. We have diminutives like et, as in cigar et or sermon et. Do we have one here? What? I can't hear you at all. Full? Think about that. I don't know. I guess that works. In any case, this just means intense darkness. Okay? So that really you should translate this, when I walk in a valley of intense darkness, deep darkness. Now, please do not make this your first agenda item at your first funeral to say the word death isn't here. Okay? Because the first funeral you go to will probably have those little cards from the funeral home with the 23rd Psalm on it. And one of the reasons the 23rd Psalm has become a favorite for funerals is this line, which is essentially a mistranslation. Now, that's okay, all right? We can live with this, all right? But at least sort of understand what's going on. Frankly, you can come full circle and argue that the deepest darkness, if we're just going to leave it at intense darkness, is certainly that faced in the shadow of death. And so that's not an inappropriate application of this line, though it's not technically what it says. When I walk in the valley of deep darkness, lo ira ra, I will not yare ra. All right? I will not be afraid or fear ra, evil. Why? Ki ata, personal pronoun, you, imadi, are with me. Imadi is that sort of alternate form of the preposition im plus the pronominal suffix e, with me. The d, the daleth, is in there just to confuse beginning Hebrew students. All right, this is in the list in the grammar book somewhere. For because you with me, shivtaka, your shavit, and your Mishnah, Hema, they, personal pronoun, they, Yinachamuni, Nacham, Nacham's a tough word, it means to regret in the Niphal, it means to comfort in the Piel. This, of course, is Piel. You have a schwa under the imperfect prefix, you have virtual doubling, no dagish. You have a defective spelling of the oo. Do you see the ending oo there? Yinachamu, because the subject is plural. And you have the pronominal suffix ni. They comfort me. Your shavit, your rod, and your mishanah, your staff. This is the shepherd's crook. They comfort me. Whether this is the same thing, you know, there's a little book called A Shepherd Looks at the 23rd Psalm or something like that, that frankly isn't bad for kind of looking at this from the eyes and paraphernalia of a shepherd. And, you know, a shepherd's crook is divided into top and bottom. One is an offensive and one is a defensive weapon. The crook is essentially defensive to snatch a sheep away from danger or off the edge of a cliff. And the other end is essentially offensive, to poke an animal in the head or whatever, to club a wolf or something like that, or at least scare him away. Whether that's exactly what rod and staff here are referring to certainly makes sense, but I'm not sure that this should be your sermon theme about God being both offensive and defensive in his protection of us. But frankly, it ain't bad either, right? Here's your object lesson for the kids. Bring in a shepherd's crook and do that. Yeah, right. Then you can take a little kid and go whoosh, and take the kid in the back row and poof. Then you've an example of each. That's not bad. Either that or use it for confirmation class. Now suddenly we shift gears from this shepherd theme to a meal, which has always seemed a little bit odd. I mean, form critically, there's always discussion whether this is a composite psalm. What in all the world are we doing having a picnic now out in the middle of the pasture? It's frankly striking and yet not inappropriate, but it does sort of shift the image here from shepherd to banquet. You arrak. You arrak means to arrange. We have the same idiom as set the table. Usually tables are already positioned when we set them. This means to put stuff on the table. And it's the same in Hebrew. You arrange stuff, lifanai, before me, to my face. You arrange before me a table. A shulchan is the standard word for table. Neged, opposite. Over against, that's what neged means. Over against, so rarai, my tsararing ones. It's really the participle of tsarar, which means to be hostile. My enemies, adversaries, guys who are agin me. Dishanta, you dishan with shemen, my rosh. Now, dishan really means to grease up. Shmir. It isn't the standard word for anoint, which is mashach, as in Messiah, all right? And I'd like to track this down. I just did a quick check in the lexicon, and this is usually used of getting all shmiry from eating fat. It's not really the normal word either for anoint or for, like, putting oil on somebody's feet or head when he comes over to visit, which is essentially, you know, the sign of hospitality, since you couldn't take off his coat, you just sprayed him with deodorant. And neither of that really works here. I think this is more the image of a meal, see? I can't help but think of Isaiah 25 and the banquet of fat food, where the eater is described as somebody with a shmiry face. And maybe that's you. So this isn't so much you anoint my head with oil, but we've had such a feast here that I'm just a mess. See? you've messed me up with fat. My cup is overflowing. This is really an adjective. Riwaya means to be stuffed, full, usually liquid. What's our word for that? Filled up, saturated. My cup is overflowing isn't bad. But it's really an adjective, not a verb. And again, that's continuing this motif of eating, not only in the presence of my enemies, which is odd enough, but this is quite a feed. See? Now, is that still a shepherd image? I mean, I'm just speculating here. I think this would be unusual also for a shepherd to provide this for his sheep. But it may be the image, too, sort of sheep gorging themselves, as they do sometimes, with the luxury of not having to worry about sort of looking over your shoulder all the time. But now clearly we're moving from the metaphor of sheep to the metaphor to the application of human beings here. I mean, it's clear this is not describing the way sheep eat, but the way people eat. And even more so now, we move to the personal dimension in verse 6. Ach, surely, this is an interjection, surely tov and chesed. Whew. Boy, you want two more loaded words. Tov and chesed. Yir defuni will radaf me, will pursue me. Not follow, but pursue me. If you know radaf, it can even mean of enemies coming after you. Okay? Now, if you want someone chasing you down, it's a lot better to have tov and chesed than it is your enemies. But this image of kind of the shepherd with his goodness going after the sheep, not just sitting passively hoping some guy will come in your church door on Sunday morning, but actually pursuing. Tov and chesed will pursue me, kol yamei chayai, all of the days of my life. Great construct chain. It's probably been on a quiz already. This is one of my favorites. All of the days of my life. And shavti. Well, here's a great form. Shavti. The rest of this is easy. Shavti bebeth Yahweh, in the house of Yahweh, for a length of days. Orek means as a prolonged period. Length of days. But now what about shavti? If you had to parse shavti, and were an astute Hebrew parser, you would parse shavti as kal, perfect, first person of the hollow root shuv. It's a hollow root shuv, shavti. Now, you know from English that that's not the way this is translated, because shuv means return, and then it should say, and I will return in the house of Yahweh for a length of days, which kind of moves the focus from this banquet out there in the field before my adversaries back to the house of the Lord. The translation assumes the footnote here, 6C, I think that's what it says, which repoints this to shivti, not shavti, but shivti, which is the infinitive construct of yashav. And frankly, the Septuagint helps us here. Now, if the infinitive construct of yashav, if it is that, then the verb means to dwell. But now this is the infinitive, and my dwelling, my action of dwelling, my yashaving is in the house of Yahweh for a long time. Well, there you, that's the evidence. Now, sooner or later, you got to pay your money and take your choice here. But it's an interesting crux that the verb form is a little unusual. Robbie, of course, trying to be all things to all people at this point, cites this as sort of his last and ultimate speculative example of intentional ambiguity in that SBL or JBL article. And he admits that that's pressing it a little bit. I'm not sure you can have it both ways. But is it possible to read this both as returning and then dwelling, and that the verb form is sort of a mixed form for that reason? I'm less than convinced by that, but at least it's an interesting thought. again, it's kind of a typical text-critical problem. If it's supposed to be Shivti, why in the world did they point at Shavti? I mean, it's certainly a move to the harder reading. Shivti makes perfectly good sense. It isn't the kind of thing where they would have been confused. You know? But there you have it. And again, the wisdom of the ages is to read it as Shivti. So my dwelling, action of dwelling, is in the house or temple of Yahweh for length of days. Well, okay, golly, it's 10 after, Jim. We want to do some...
Nice job.